Hey, Fed Eds, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 99, Spotlight on Arturo Fuente. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We're broadcast live around the world and picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. We, of course, broadcast live on CigarFederation.com, through YouTube, and now on Facebook Live. Check it out. And, of course, thanks to all of our podcast listeners, wherever you are in the world. We know you are all scattered across the world, and we appreciate you tuning in and subscribing. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Trippy Trent. Trippy Trent,
hey, what's
going on, brother? How are you're in Portland, right?
That is correct.
How is this lovely winter weather in Portland for you?
A little chilly for me, but not terrible. It's about 38 right now, which isn't horrible.
But no, I would be happy.
I'd rather be in Nicaragua. Yeah.
So say we all. So yeah, I mean, it's. I think we're for our audience, of course, we're doing a short pour edition, which means not a total 1 hour edition. And part of that's because I'm being a big baby and don't want to smoke in 0 degree weather, but also because we want to take a bit of a break this week from doing a full hour episode. We found some of our Facebook listeners didn't want to tune in for the full 1 hour episode. So we're going to go back to our short pour for this particular episode. This is, of course, the show where we pair cigars and, well, I was going to say whiskey, but really we pair kind of just about anything.
Get our hands on.
Yeah, really anything we can get our hands on. Now, of course, we are pairing, because this is the Spotlight on the Toro Fuente show, we are pairing our Toro Fuentes. What are you pairing? What cigar you got loaded up tonight?
I've got the old Don Carlos Robusto.
Hello.
A classic. They changed the band, which is a little confusing, but I'm 90% sure that this is the same Don Carlos Reserva that it always was.
I love Fuente. Let me just preface this by saying I love Fuente. Now, I understand Fuente is going to a slightly different band schedule for some of their cigars, which might clear up some of the confusion, because I do find that there is a little bit of decoding involved, which, you know, it's fine. It's kind of one of those things that I prefer not to do. I just want to pick up my Fuente, and I want to know what Fuente I'm smoking. And, you know, I am in fact smoking. I don't know if you can see that through my big gloves here, but I'm smoking the Fuente Gran Reserva. Now, we kind of talked offline a little bit before the show started. The Fuente Gran Reserva that I'm smoking is the 898, which is they call it the Flor Fina, and it uses a natural wrapper. What kind of natural wrapper, you ask? Well, I ask the same thing. So it's a natural African Cameroon wrapper, and this is the Lonsdale.
Is it?
It is. It's a 6.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I had to look it up. So it's a 6.25x47 ring gauge using Dominican binder, Dominican filler. And it's good. I'm not sure it's going to really suit what we're pairing with tonight, but it's good. I enjoy it. We've been joking on the show for years that Cameroon kind of pairs with everything. So I guess tonight we're going to kind of find out.
Yeah, and mine's actually Cameroon as well. I never knew that those were Cameroon too. I thought that was the whole thing with the Don Carlos was the Cameroon, but it must be a different, I would assume a different priming on the wrapper, and probably a different mix of fillers. Also,
yeah,
the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding is that I think they use Cameroon on a significant portion, like the Hemingway, the short story Hemingway uses a Cameroon, which I, for the record, just love Hemingway's, whether it's the short story or whether it's the regular long Hemingway. Those I can smoke through, like, I don't know, a dozen of those in a week if I put my mind to it.
Those things are fantastic.
It's like candy. Just a reminder to your audience, you are tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 99, and Sharing Our Pairings is brought to you by Gurkha Cigars. Try the Gurkha Cellar Reserve, rated as one of the highest rated cigars in the world, entire world. So check out the Gurkha Cellar Reserve. Talk to your local B&M. If they don't carry it, I'm sure you can find it online, but I'm pretty sure they're going to have some Gurkhas that'll fit your palate, and Cellar Reserve is probably one of them. But we're not talking about Gurkha tonight. We're talking about Arturo Fuente. And I'm kind of excited to get into the pairings, because it is a little chilly, and this is kind of the weather for whiskey, and we are doing some cool Japanese whiskeys. I apologize for the scene changes there. I've got some big fat fingers with these gloves, so it's a little bit tough to be nuanced with my camera changes, but we are doing some whiskey, so maybe Trippy Trent, you can kick us off, because you've got a really interesting Japanese whiskey here tonight.
Yeah, I've got a really interesting one. So we don't have a lot of Japanese whiskeys available in Oregon. There's a huge Japanese culture here. We've got Japanese gardens. Sushi, of course, is huge. We've even got a couple of sake breweries around. But what we don't have is a good selection of Japanese whiskey.
Since that is a crime.
our liquor distribution is all through the state. We end up with, I believe yesterday when I was looking at the list, it was something like 8 different bottlings. And it's not a big selection at all. But I found this one on there, which I had never heard of. It's called Akashi. And it's brewed by, I'm going to mess this up, I believe it's Iyagishima. It is a blended whiskey that they don't really disclose the age on. Actually, let me talk about the distillery a little bit first, because they've got a pretty interesting story. They were founded in 1888, and they were originally, all they made was soju and sake.
Which, and then I love a good sake for the record.
Oh, yeah, me too. So I might have to hunt down some of their sakes. And then in 1919, which is kind of when whiskey culture started in Japan. Oops, my lights went out. They got their whiskey license in 1919 and started making whiskey. The weird thing, 1919, Miller Man, not 99. The weird thing is I couldn't find really any details about what kind of whiskey they
I assume it's got to be a grain whiskey, some kind of grain whiskey.
That's what I would think. The only thing it's kind of described as is not modern whiskey. Hmm. Like, I don't know what they called whiskey back then. There was one picture that I saw of a bottle that was like a hip flask kind of bottle that just said old style Scotch whiskey that apparently they made back before you were allowed to, or before they only would allow you to call Scotch if it was made in Scotland.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is Akashi, which is their blended whiskey. As far as I can tell, this came out within about the last 10 years when they really started to make what modern people call whiskey. And the really interesting thing about this is it says that they use some sake method when they're making it. Even though they don't describe exactly what kind of techniques those are, they call it the only whiskey in the world that's actually made by a sake maker instead of a master distiller, rather. And the distillate that they use, even though it's blended, the distillate ends up being 70% corn and 30% lightly peated barley that's imported from Scotland.
Huh.
My guess is they buy the corn-based liquor and they make the peated barley liquor themselves. They age that in American oak soju casks for 3 years. Then they age it in ex-bourbon barrels for an undisclosed amount of time. And then they finish it in sherry casks for 2 years. So they've got 3 different casks. Well, which is pretty cool. So
now, sorry,
somewhere around 5 years of age on this.
Because if I remember right, the Akashi, they have a white oak tree on the front of the bottle, do they not? And so interestingly enough, that's how I've always seen it. Like, it's this weird thing where I've seen it referred to as Akashi, but I've also seen it referred to as white oak. And I'm not sure if white, like Akashi, maybe means white oak, but because I do not speak Japanese, so.
That's what Iyagishima means. The name of the distillery translates to white oak.
Oh, okay. Well,
so
that makes
sense.
They
don't actually use Japanese white oak, that's the name of the distillery.
All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. So the interesting thing about that is that it's kind of one of those things where I've seen it referred to a lot as white oak. In fact, when we're down in Vegas at the IPCPR, one of the main circle bar, but the other circle bar, actually called the circle bar, had Akashi on the menu, but they call it Akashi white oak. And they just had like 2 or 3 different kinds of quote unquote white oak, which was tough to sort of decipher exactly which one it was. But it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I mean, and
the aging process is cool.
From what I've seen online, they all say white oak on the bottle, but except for this bottle that I have in my hand. I'm not sure why. It appears to be the same whiskey in the bottle that's as the one that say white oak. I don't know if that changed recently or what.
Well, here's one of the interesting factoid is I learned that bottles for export are typically considered to be the highest quality product. And when you see a bottle for export, it's prominently going to have mostly English writing on it versus Japanese kanji symbols, which, I mean, I don't know if that's just kind of Scottish culture appropriating the whiskey, even so, like, there's a whole thing to that, but it's kind of interesting that they would consider the mark of quality to have English characters predominantly displayed in the bottle versus Japanese writing, which, you know, to me, it's kind of reverse. You'd think if it's a Japanese product, you want Japanese writing prominently in the bottle, but that's kind of not how their industry.
Yeah, it's weird. And I know that some of their some of their higher end whiskeys from, I don't even want to say it, from White Oak.
Yeah.
Some of their higher end whiskeys have only kanji on the bottle. Huh. They have no English at all.
Which probably makes sense because you're probably not exporting that product.
Yeah.
So that makes a lot of sense. All right. So I'm going to hold up carefully in my big fat finger gloves. I have something really interesting here. And you can see it's kind of got the little medicinal bottle, kind of what you'd expect out of it. I don't know, if you went into like an old school, old timey pharmacy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is from Nikka. So two of the biggest whiskey companies in Japan that really sort of, I think, I don't know what the volume is, but I think it's like 70 or 80% of the whiskey that's manufactured in Japan. You've got Nikka and you've got Suntory Beam. Nikka was originally founded by Masataka Takatsuro, which is really the godfather, the creator of Japanese whiskey in Japan. He founded whiskey making in Japan by going over to Scotland. We've talked about him time and time again. Very, very cool individual. So we won't go into great detail there, but what's really cool is that Nikka, first of all, owns a number of distilleries. They own Yoichi, which is kind of located at the north end of Japan, and then Miyagikyo, which is kind of central-ish, north-central Japan. And then they've also got Moji, which is sort of very, very, very southern, southwestern Japan on the southern western tip of... But then they've got all of these sort of plants and other associated beverage companies along with that. So like they own Sapporo, they own the Hirasaki plant, which does cider and brandy and apple wine. They own Tajigi is they do coffee grain whiskey. So that's what the coffee stills, not the actual beverage coffee, but coffee, the name of the still from the guy who invented it. And they also store and age barrels at the Tajigi facility. And then Nishinomiya is a bottling plant, and Kashiwa is a bottling plant. So they've got facilities all over Japan. Like, there's a lot of pieces, and it's interesting to me that it's spread out so far across Japan. You know, because that from a manufacturing perspective, normally you want sort of all your facilities in one place because it's a lot easier to manufacture, bottle, distribute, age, etc. If it's all kind of in one place, if you're shipping it all over the place, that's a lot of work. But that's kind of how the company's laid out. It's kind of all over, and there's pieces that are all over. So that's kind of cool. So a little bit about this pure malt. And there's actually two other kinds of malts. And interestingly enough, they've taken the pure malt white off the website. So I don't know if perhaps it was a Canadian-only release, or maybe it was a Canadian-only release, and or not a Canadian-only release, and then they just took it down because they didn't find it as popular. But I like it, and I'm glad I bought it. So essentially, they've got two main releases, which is their pure malt black and their pure malt red. And this is a vatting of black, red, and white. And curiously, and just so people out there know, vatting essentially means, vatting is really kind of what you essentially do when you make any kind of whiskey. Typically, when you make whiskey, it doesn't come from one barrel. You basically take 5 or 6 or 10 or however many barrels, and you put them all together to get your final product because they're going for a consistent taste, and you can't really get that consistent taste with the same bottle or barrel every time. So essentially they've added three different styles of whiskey together to get this white. And they call this the most heavily peated whiskey. And that's sort of heavily peated by Japanese standards, which is not very heavily peated by Scottish standards. Certainly not my palate. And no surprise, 43%, which, you know, we talked about a couple episodes ago, talked about Japanese whiskey kind of being at 43. What was the...
Right before you got to that, I was thinking about it. Interestingly, this one is 40%.
What?
Which, I mean, it's the only Japanese whiskey I've ever seen that's only 40%.
Yeah, that's strange. All right. So it's 43%, which, you know, other than the exception you've got on you,
mm-hmm.
Almost all Japanese whiskey is minimum 43%. There's some occasional ones that are 46, but pretty much across the board, they're at 43%. They say it has intense smoke and peat aromas dominating the palate, and it's complemented by slightly salty and vegetal notes on the palate. That's kind of interesting to me, and you know, I haven't had it in a while, so I figured this was kind of an interesting test to pair a Cameroon wrapper and Arturo Fuente, which is not, I wouldn't describe this cigar as mild, but I certainly wouldn't describe this cigar as medium. It's kind of in the, you know, somewhere between light plus, medium minus, subtle category for me, and Yeah, definitely. It's kind of nutty. Got a little bit of grassy tones there, a little bit of hay. It's you know, a lot of woody notes, and I enjoy that. I mean, it's a nice, easy smoke. What kind of flavor notes are you getting off your Don Carlos?
So while you were talking about that, I was thinking about how these are the similar wrappers. At least they're both Cameroon. Yep. I think this is kind of an amped up version of that blend, because this one definitely has a little more Lajero in it. It's a little spicier, a little meatier. But you still get kind of those grassy notes and that that very subtle, like, cinnamon note from the Cameroon wrapper. And it's definitely a little stronger. I would put this at a solid medium, not quite medium plus.
Okay. Now, have you had the Akashi before tonight?
I had a little cheat glass last night.
Little show prep?
Yeah, just a little research for the show.
I gotcha.
It reminds me a lot of Oban,
okay.
But it doesn't quite taste the same as Oban. But it's kind of got that that mix between these sweet flavors of the more mainland kind of scotches, and then a little bit of that peaty, salty brininess that you get from an Islay whiskey. This isn't as heavily peated. It's not even close to an Islay whiskey. Okay. But it's kind of that Oban character where it's got the smoke in the background and it doesn't really hit you in the face. It's got a little more of the brininess than there is the smoke from the peat.
Okay. Well, I mean, the interesting thing about this 898, it's really evolved since I first lit it up, and I probably should have lit it up a little bit sooner before the show. I kind of lit it up maybe 10 minutes before the show, and I probably should have gotten about 20 minutes in, because it's really evolving to sort of a more sweet, nutty character, which is kind of where I wanted it to be. Because I kind of felt that nuttiness that I get off, like a Hemingway, for example, and I certainly get off the Grand Reservas, would be a good complement to a Japanese whiskey, because I don't tend to get a lot of nuttiness off Japanese whiskey. But I kind of want to get to tasting here. So I don't know if you want to maybe wax poetic about your cigar or talk a little bit about the Akashi.
Oh, I can talk about both.
Roger that. So I'm gonna have some sippies and you do your thing.
Yeah. So this whiskey, I think it actually goes really well with the cigar. It starts off with a little bit of that smoke, a little bit of that brininess, and then you start getting a little bit of fruit character. And then the finish is kind of a almost sour apple or pear. It's kind of not super sour, but enough that you kind of feel it on your tongue.
Okay.
And then the cigar, I'm not getting any of that nuttiness that you're talking about. This thing is definitely a little more full-bodied than it's got some black pepper, some sweet caramel kind of flavors, some again the cinnamon. It's kind of subtle. I think the cinnamon of the wrapper is kind of overpowered by the spice of the filler.
Interesting. So, I mean, I would say that, yeah, we're getting very different flavor profiles off of our cigars, because this is very creamy, very sweet, very nutty, and it's an interesting contrast to this whiskey, which, again, they call it heavily peated. I would sort of put this in the category of like a Talisker, where it's, you know, smoky, slightly smoky,
mm-hmm.
not peated. When when I think of peated, I think of Lafroig, Lagavulin, you know, Port Charlotte, Octomore, that kind of thing, Ardbeg, and this is not in that category at all, not even close, actually. And the one thing I do get beyond a little bit of smoke there is I do really get sort of this fruity quality that I would typically get off of a bourbon cask. You know, it's got that nice stone fruit quality, a little bit of vanilla. And then there is a nice finish to it that's got that sort of salty, briny character they talk about. And in fact, I find that the salty, briny characteristic is a lot more prominent than the smoke. In fact, probably 2 to 3 times as prominent as the smoke. So that kind of tells you how subtle that smoke is. But what that salty briny does for the cigar is it really supercharges the cigar experience. So when I take a draw of the cigar, you know, I get the flavors, et cetera, et cetera. I take a sip of the whiskey and then take a puff off the cigar, and really I get this supercharged nuttiness. So I would say absolutely this whiskey is serving to complement this cigar in every way possible, and really, for me, bring out all the notes that are in this cigar. Many that, you know, are there, but certainly not to the same degree as if I have a sip of the whiskey.
Sure. I'm just noticing, I think it's probably the sherry. I don't drink a lot of sherry scotches, but I'm getting sort of a minty menthol finish on this, which I find brings out a lot of sweetness in the cigar.
So mintiness is not I mean, that's interesting because mintiness is not something I normally get a lot in whiskeys, and I haven't had a lot of the Akashi other than, you know, one small example. And I think it because even up here where I've got a dearth of Japanese whiskey, I've never seen Akashi on the shelf. So that's kind of interesting. And it's interesting that it's serving to complement.
Yeah, it definitely brings out the sweetness of the cigar a little bit, and maybe a little bit of nuttiness. There's some sort of flavor that I only get immediately after taking a sip that I just can't quite identify.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like I said, when I take a sip of this whiskey and take a puff off the cigar, absolutely stunning combination, which is interesting because I think if I'd gone with something that was I'm not sure if a Talisker would go with this really, because I think the Talisker smoke is just too much and it'd been really overrun over the cigar, which is what I would describe this cigar as nuanced and in light and subtle. So I think going any strong on the peat scale would just run the cigar over, but this manages to just really, really work well. It actually makes me want to try pouring the pure malt red and the pure malt black just to kind of see how they fare with the dialed back peatiness, but sort of some of the same core characteristic.
I'm trying to see if I can get any other flavors out of this whiskey because I feel like there's something that I'm missing. It's not a super flavorful whiskey. It's not full bodied.
Yeah.
It's very, very nuanced, and I'm wondering if the cigar is starting to kind of blow out the palate a little bit so that I'm just not tasting as much of the nuance of the whiskey as I could be.
Right. Well, I think that's kind of one of the risks of high ABV spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're drinking rum, although I guess there are a lot of rums that are somewhat high ABV, but you know, typically I find that rums don't run over cigar because of that sweetness, where sometimes the risk with whiskey is because it is so, in many cases, alcohol forward, you know, and sometimes you do get a lot of spiciness from a whiskey. That can be really tough because some of the nuances of the cigar might get run over. But
yeah.
That being said, this is a winning combination. I would happily drink this all night long. I would probably rank this pairing 7.5 out of 10. So really good, doesn't necessarily blow my skirt up, but happily to sit there and, you know, if it was warmer and pair and smoke, and I'd be in my happy place.
Yeah, I think your pairing went a little better than mine tonight. I think I would probably give this about a 6, just because the cigar is just a little too strong for this kind of whiskey, because it's got so much nuance, and it's very lightly peated. The flavors just aren't as forward as most of the whiskeys that we drink on the show.
Right. Well, that's interesting because, you know, normally when we talk about whiskey, especially whiskey pairing,
yeah,
we normally wouldn't talk about a cigar running a whiskey over, right? Like even when you talk about really nuanced, really subtle, really delicate whiskeys, you normally wouldn't find a lot of cigars unless you're getting into, you know, something from Neanderthal, something from Romacraft, you know, really full-bodied cigars. That's really the territory I think of when running over whiskey. So it's kind of interesting that you know, and again, I think Japanese whiskey tends to be pretty delicate, pretty nuanced.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And this is definitely one of the more delicate Japanese whiskeys that I've had. I would categorize it as a couple notches below how delicate like a Yamazaki 12 is.
Right, right. So on if you were to give it a 1 out of 10 scale for quality of pairing, how would you rate it?
Oh, I already said I'll give it a 6.
6?
Okay. Yeah, it's not great. Not terrible.
Okay.
Could be better.
Well, we interesting pairing. Interesting combination of Fuente and Japanese whiskey. Kind of a hit for me, kind of a miss for a trip.
Mm-hmm.
We will not be back tomorrow night with Cigar Chat, unfortunately. Logan is on location right now in the Dominican Republic, so we're not going to have a cigar chat tomorrow night. Probably just as well, because it is balls cold here, and that is just, quite frankly, unpleasant. But
yeah.
We will be back next week with a regular scheduled time of 6 p.m. Mountain Eastern of our 100th episode of Sharing Our Pairings. I'm sure we're going to have something very special in store for you.
We got to come up with something good.
We're going to come up with something. As we were sharing our pairings, I want everyone out there to drink better, but drink less.